Richard's offices were on the third floor of a big, old, rather draughty building just off the Strand. Jessica worked about halfway up a large, crystalline, mirrored structure in the City of London, 15 minutes' walk up the road. Richard jogged up the road. He got to the Stockton building in 10 minutes, walked straight past the uniformed security guards on duty on the ground floor, stepped into the elevator and went up. The inside of the elevator was mirrored, and he stared at himself as he went up. His tie was half undone and askew, his coat was ripped, his trousers torn, his hair was a sweaty mess. God, he looked awful. There was a fluting tone, and the elevator door opened. The floor of the Stockton building on which Jessica worked was quite opulent in an under-decorated sort of way. There was a receptionist by the lift, a poised and elegant creature who looked like her take-home pay beat Richard's hands down. She was reading Cosmopolitan. She did not look up as Richard came over. "I need to talk to Jessica Bartram," said Richard. "It's important. I have to speak with her." The receptionist ignored him, intent upon examining her nails. Richard walked down the corridor until he got to Jessica's office. He opened the door and went in. She was standing in front of 3 large posters, each advertising Angels Over England, a travelling exhibition, each with a different image of an angel on it. She turned as he came in and she smiled warmly at him. "Jessica, thank God. Listen, I think I'm going mad or something. It started when I couldn't get a taxi this morning. And then the office and the tube and..." He showed her his ragged sleeve. "It's like I've become some kind of non-person." She smiled at him some more, reassuringly. "Look," said Richard, "I'm sorry about the other night. Well, not about what I did, but about upsetting you. And look, I'm sorry, and it's all crazy, and I don't honestly know what to do." And Jessica nodded and continued to smile sympathetically. And then she said, "You're going to think I'm absolutely awful, but I have a really dreadful memory for faces. Give me a second, and I know I'll get it." And at that point, Richard knew that it was real, and a heavy dread settled in the pit of his stomach. Whatever madness was happening that day was really happening. It was no joke, no trick or prank. "It's okay," he said dully. "Forget it." And he walked away, out the door and down the corridor. He was almost at the lift when she called his name. "Richard!" He turned. It had been a joke. Some kind of petty revenge, something he could explain. "Richard Maybury?" She seemed proud of herself for remembering that much. "Mayhew," said Richard. And he got into the elevator, and the doors sang a sad, fluting, downward trill as they closed behind him. Richard walked back to his flat, upset and confused and angry. Sometimes he would wave at taxis, but never with any real hope that they would stop, and none of them did. His feet hurt and his eyes stung, and he knew that soon enough he would wake up from today, and a proper Monday, a sensible Monday, a decent, honest Monday would begin. When he reached the flat, he filled the bathtub with hot water, abandoned his clothes on the bed and, naked, walked through the hall and climbed into the relaxing waters. He'd almost dozed off when he heard a key turn, a door open and close, and a smooth male voice say, "Of course, you're the first I've shown around today, but I've got a list of people as long as your arm who are interested."
"It's not as large as I imagined from the details your office sent us," said a woman.
"It's compact, yes, but I like to think of that as a virtue."
Richard had not bothered locking the bathroom door. He was, after all, the only person there.
A gruffer, rougher male voice said, "Thought you said it was an unfurnished flat. Looks pretty damn furnished to me."
"The previous tenant must have left some of his accoutrements behind."
Funny, they never told me anything about that."
Richard stood up in the bathtub. Then, because he was naked and the people could walk in at any moment, he sat down in the bathtub.
And then, rather desperately, he looked around the bathroom for a towel. "Oh, look, George," said the woman in the hallway. "Someone's left a towel on this chair." Richard inspected and rejected as poor towel substitutes a loofah, a half-empty bottle of shampoo, and a small yellow rubber duck. "What's the bathroom like?" asked the woman. Richard grabbed a washcloth and draped it in front of his crotch. Then he stood up with his back to the wall and prepared to be mortifyingly embarrassed. The door was pushed open. Three of them walked into the bathroom, a young man in a camel hair coat and a middle-aged couple. Richard wondered if they were as embarrassed as he was. "It's a bit small," said the woman. "Compact," corrected the camel hair coat smoothly. "Easy to take care of." The woman ran her finger along the side of the sink and wrinkled her nose. "I think we've seen it all," said the middle-aged man. They walked out of the bathroom. "It would be very handy for everything," said the woman. A conversation continued in lower tones. Richard climbed out of the bath and edged over to the door. He spotted the towel on the chair in the hall and he leaned out and grabbed it. "We'll take it," said the woman. "You will?" said the camel hair coat. "It's just what we want," she explained, "or it will be once we've made it homey." "Could it be ready for Wednesday?"
"Of course. We'll have all of this rubbish cleaned out of here tomorrow, no problem."
Richard, cold and dripping and wrapped in his towel, glared at them from the doorway.
"It's not rubbish," he said. "It's my stuff."
"We'll pick up the keys from your office then."
"Excuse me," said Richard plaintively. "I live here."
They pushed past Richard on their way to the front door.
"Pleasure doing business with you," said the camel hair coat.
Can any of you hear me? This is my flat.
I live here."
"If you fax contract details to my office," said the gruff man. Then the door slammed behind them, and Richard stood in the hallway of what used to be his flat, and he shivered in the silence from the cold.
"This," announced Richard to the world, in direct defiance of the evidence of his senses, "is not happening." The bat phone shrilled, and its headlights flashed. Richard picked it up warily. "Hello?" The line hissed and crackled, as if the call were coming from a long way away. The voice at the other end of the phone was unfamiliar.
"Mr. Mayhew?"
it said.
"Mr. Richard Mayhew?"
"Yes," he said, and then, delighted, "you can hear me. Oh, thank God. Who is this?"
"My associate and I met you on Saturday, Mr. Mayhew. I was inquiring as to the whereabouts of a certain young lady. Do you remember?"
The tones were oily, nasty, foxy. "Oh, yes, that's you."
"Mr. Mayhew, you said Dore wasn't with you. We have reason to believe that you were embroidering the truth more than perhaps a little."
"Well, you said you were her brother."
"All men are brothers, Mr. Mayhew."
"She's not here anymore, and I don't know where she is."
"We know that, Mr. Mayhew. We are perfectly cognizant of both of those facts. And to be magnificently frank, Mr. Mayhew, and I'm sure you want me to be frank, don't you? Were I you, I would no longer worry about the young lady. Her days are numbered, and the number in question isn't even in the double digits.
Why are you calling me?"
"Mr. Mayhew,"
said Mr. Croup helpfully,
Do you know what your own liver tastes like?
Richard said nothing.
Because Mr. Vandermeer has promised me that he's personally going to cut it out and stuff it into your mouth before he slits your sad little throat.
So you'll find out, won't you? "I'm calling the police. You can't threaten me like this."
Mr. Mayhew, you can call anyone you wish.
But I'd hate you to think we were making a threat. Neither myself nor Mr. Vandermeer make threats. Do we, Mr. Vandermeer? No, then what the hell are you doing?
We're making a promise?
Said Mr. Croup, through the static and the echo and the hiss.
And we do know where you live.
And he hung up. Richard held the bat phone tightly, staring at it. Then he stabbed the 9 key 3 times. Fire, police and ambulance. Emergency services, said the emergency operator. What service do you require? Can you put me through to the police, please? A man just threatened to kill me and I don't think he was joking. There was a pause. He hoped he was being put through to the police. After a few moments, the voice said, Emergency services? Hello? Is there anyone there? Hello? And then Richard put down the bat phone and went into his bedroom and put his clothes on because he was cold and naked and scared. And there wasn't really anything else he could do.